Couple of things I think kind of cool. The Jacobs are gone this week because they're celebrating the anniversary, which is a great thing to celebrate, right? And then last Friday night, I was at the game night, and I won. Yes. And but before I won, I noticed that Andrew is practicing responding to the bids of his wife. It was great. So we're playing, and Amber's like, I would like a cookie. And Andrew's like, yes, dear. How many would you like? You know what I mean? And so Andrew is doing a great job responding to your bids. And so I'm glad we're practicing. So and Amber enjoyed that message, and Andrew's listening. And so, okay. Does anybody call you like Ambrew or something like that? It's a kind of, no? Okay. Okay. Ambrew. Amber and Andrew is kind of combined.
That sounds like a draft beer.
It does. I know people who have, like, the stuff to do homebrewing, okay? So you can make your own Ambrew. So,
Do people call me Degina? Like, what is that?
Yes, we do. When you're not around, we do. So,
Rustin?
I like Rustin. Okay. Hey, focus, people. Please focus, okay? Only one of us can be ADHD. So here we go. We're now in week three. Oh, my gosh. So, I'm glad you're back. So here we go. The first week we talked about how we need to know our spouse's world, developing our love map, right? And so because our spouses change, if we don't stay in tune with them, we lose track of what's important to them. We talked about cultivating fondness and admiration. And that's like learning to look for things that you can appreciate. And then we also talked about looking for and turning to the bids of our spouse or our partner. And so we're just kind of getting tuned in and trying to meet those needs. And do you remember like the magic number I believe last week was it 83%? 87%? Did Carla raise it on us? Is it 87%? Okay, so that means there's occasionally you may miss a bid, and it's going to be okay. You don't have to get 100% of the bids, right? So, but that's our goal. And then we had some do's or don'ts. We had some don'ts also. And so I mentioned don't criticize. We complain instead of criticize. You know the difference? A complaint is about a specific issue, and you're attaching your feeling. I feel sad when you... I felt sad. No, I felt angry when the toilet seat was left up, okay? And so please put that down again, right? So that's a complaint. A criticism is global character assassination. You stink because you left the toilet seat down, right? That's a criticism. I didn't talk about this, but the next step up from that would be contempt, okay? That's the anger, deep brooding anger where somebody says something to you and you just like roll your eyes. You know what I'm saying? Contempt, right? So we didn't talk about that, but I want to throw that out there now because we'll need it later. So we have don't criticize, complain instead with a specific way of doing it. Then last week we talked about not beginning with a harsh startup, right? So if you have a complaint, that something's bothering you, start slowly, identify what's going on inside. This is what I'm feeling about this. Don't just like blast out, okay? That's a huge deal. So our guiding principle for this series is that marriage is a symbol of the relationship between Christ and the church, okay? And God's had this all planned out from the very beginning. It's a symbol of the relationship between Christ and the church. And so we can take our guidance from that, and it also tells us how Christ feels about us, right? So we're kind of looking at that concept, and we spent a bunch of time on that in week one. And so the idea here is we're looking for Jesus' example to follow. And we've been covering some do's, I do's, and some I don'ts, kind of like your wedding vows, right? And usually we've been doing the don'ts first, but we're going to do the don'ts. I'm sorry, usually we do the don'ts second. We're going to do it first today, okay? So before I share our first don't, choose careful how you are going to respond to this statement, okay? This is not the time to elbow your partner. Okay, so let's just hypothetically say if I was like week one, don't criticize, right? This is not the time to do it. This is not the time to laugh too out loud because that might be a prompt that you're laughing at your spouse, okay? Because this may be a weakness of your spouse, okay? And so let me say this. It will not help, okay? It may hurt, okay? So here we go. The don't this week is don't get defensive. Don't elbow, okay, because that will just trigger the defensive mechanisms, right? So don't get defensive, okay? Don't get defensive. Now, can you see how the don't criticize and the don't have the harsh startup can relate to the don't get defensive, right? So because if somebody criticizes, then the defensive person gets defensive. And typically in a marriage relationship, you might have the person who criticizes, and they match up really well with a person that is defensive, right? So can I have a couple that I can role play with this week? Just kind of use your names. I'm just like, I need a volunteer so you're not offended by this. We'll do Andrew and Amber. They raised their hands. Andrew, I'm so sorry. But here we go. And I do not know the situation, okay? But I might guess. Okay, so let's say Amber is the criticizer, okay? Because she's kind of a verbal person, right? And so she's a criticizer, slightly verbal. She criticizes it. And let's say Andrew is the defensive person, right? And so what happens here is this. Amber criticizes Andrew. This is great that I praised you guys earlier. Okay, so Amber criticizes Andrew, and she says, "You're a lousy husband because you don't put the toilet seat down." And Andrew gets defensive. He heard that he was a lousy husband, right? So, and rather than hearing that he didn't put the toilet seat down, what he's thinking is, he's hearing, "I'm a lousy husband." And so what's his options? He could try to filter through all of Amber's emotion. That would take a very strong man to do. More likely, what he's going to do is he's going to tell her why he's a good husband, right? And he's like, "I work hard for you. You're supposed to." You know what I mean? And so we have like this thing going back and forth. So she criticizes, he gets defensive. And so sometimes, though, he might go like this. After she says, "You're a lousy husband," and he responds back, "Well, you're not such a hot wife either." Do you understand how that works? So he's defended himself, and he's going to, like, push back, okay? So, and what happens is you get in, like, this cycle, okay? And so somebody criticizes, somebody gets defensive, then it gets more difficult. Years ago, I would talk about in marriage counseling, don't use any below-the-belt shots, you know what I mean? So, like, "You didn't put the toilet seat down. You're a bad husband." "Well, you're a bad wife." "Well, you're just like your dad." Ooh, below the belt shot, right? Especially if there's not a good relationship there. And so we have this cycle that develops. And here's a problem. Have you ever been in this situation? You're like, "Why are you fighting? You started it. You started it." Now, kids do this all the time. How many of you had kids that do this? Okay. Frank, this isn't happening in your family at all? Nobody does? You started? Oh my gosh. Okay. We are not worthy. Okay, so we have like this, who started it type of thing, right? And here's the truth, you guys. There's really no real beginning to this cycle, okay? It starts off at a very, very minor level. You don't even notice it, okay? You notice like a little blaming, but he doesn't respond or she doesn't respond, and maybe a little bit defensive. And what happens is this. You're like in day 2000 of your marriage, and something happens, and somebody responds not just in that moment, they're responding from the previous 2,000 days, right? No, seriously, they are. And so, in fact, Amber may realize Andrew's defensive, and he's not listening to me, so I'm going to get my best shot in first, right? I'm going to hit him right here before he gets defensive, right? And so, and you're like, Andrew's like, "Well, you started it." Well, it's possible that she's doing the harsh startup because he's been defensive for the previous year, right? So trying to figure out who started it is not going to help your cause, okay? So it starts with like this pattern there, okay? And these cycles tend to get faster and more intense as time goes on. So you can get to the point in your marriage or any relationship where you can go from like being at peace to a full blazing fire of an argument in seconds, because all this stuff has been stored up from the past, and you know how the dance goes, right? So, when one feels attacked by a complaint, which is okay, but it's still like a defensive person might still have a hard time with it. When one feels attacked by a complaint or a criticism, or a harsh expression, or maybe some contempt, it seems reasonable to get defensive, doesn't it? You're feeling attacked. Right? Think in politics. If a country moves their tanks to the border, what's the other country do? Move their tanks to the border, right? So we kind of have this idea. And so if we're feeling attacked, we want to get defensive. But it rarely helps. Getting defensive rarely helps. The attacking spouse, like if you get defensive and you attack back, the attacking spouse rarely changes their mind. Okay, so let's role play this again. Amber says, you're a lousy husband because you don't put the toilet seat down. And Andrew gets defensive and he's like, well, you're not a great wife yourself. Is Amber likely to go, oh, you know what? I'm sorry I said that wrong. No, what did she hear? I'm not a great wife. And so she's gonna attack back. So attacking your spouse rarely changes your spouse's mind. Okay, you can probably count on like one hand how many times attacking helped your cause, right? Out of like all the hundreds and hundreds of discussions you had. Now here's why. Because defensiveness really blames the other person. It's like, it isn't me, it's you. Do you remember Adam and Eve in the garden? They both sinned, right? And God's like, what happened, guys? And Adam's like, she told me to. Like he has no ability to refrain and say no to his wife, okay? And, of course, she was naked, so it's slightly more complicated there. But like, he has no control over this, right? And then she's like, well, the serpent, the talking snake. FYI, if a snake is talking to you, do not listen to the advice, right? But so he blames Eve. Eve blames the snake. And so we have this whole pattern. At the first marriage, they blame. So we're not alone. Was that awkward for you? Okay, whatever. So the first marriage, they get defensive. And one common form of defensiveness is the innocent victim. Right? You might have seen this before. Maybe this is one of your techniques. You're like, why are you always picking on me? I can never please you. What about the good stuff I do, right? And so what the idea is this, is as one spouse, you know, shares a complaint or a concern, and the other spouse's response is, rather than validating that issue and saying, how work on that, what are they saying? It's like, you're always picking on me, which basically you're saying is, you're saying, just ignore this because you're always picking on me or I do other good stuff. And so it rarely helps. In fact, defensiveness actually escalates the argument. Now maybe you've seen this, where you confront your spouse on something, and they get defensive. Okay, they fire back. Now you fire back. You fire back. And at some point in time, one spouse just shuts down. Right, and so maybe the guy goes, "I'm going to go in the garage, or I'm going to go in my man cave," or she's like, "I'm going to go in my woman cave and knit or something." I don't know what you do. So, and what happens sometimes, you might, do not raise your hand on this, but it might be tempting to go over to the man cave and say, I'm not finished with you right now, right? Now, you have, none of you have done that probably because you're so much healthier than other people, but this happens. So defensiveness actually escalates the argument. And then what happens is in this argument, you get a mix of complaints and criticisms and contempt and defensiveness, and it's like a tennis match. You're just going back and forth. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. I wouldn't get defensive if he or she wouldn't criticize me. Right? And I say that because I've been there. I understand that sentiment, right? I wouldn't get defensive if he or she wouldn't criticize me. But then the other person says, I wouldn't criticize or talk to her or she, if she wouldn't get defensive. You know what I mean? So it kind of goes back and forth. And so you have both sides and you're in this cycle, and here's the truth. Somebody just needs to stop it. Right? Somebody's just going to have to step up and go, we're in a cycle, we need to stop it. It could be the person who does the initial, you know, the initial complaint or criticism. It could be the defensive person who just goes, you know what, I'm feeling really defensive right now, but I'm not going to fight back. Can we just talk? Can we lower the energy level? Can we lower the emotion level? And can we just talk? So somebody is going to have to just stop it. The problem is going to be the defensive person is going to feel like they're being attacked. And the attacker person, for lack of a better term, is going to feel like they're not being listened to. Right? And you have the cycle going back and forth. And somebody's just going to have to say, you know what? Let's stop this. You have to be aware of your own emotional state and go, let's stop this. So that is our don't get defensive. So how can we become less defensive? We need to let your partner influence you by taking into consideration his or her thoughts and feelings. We need to let our partner influence you by taking into consideration his or her thoughts and feelings. Now, our whole series has been based on following the example of Jesus. Okay? Did he let others influence him, or was he like a lone ranger? Typically, you guys, typically, the man is the defensive one. Okay? Not always, but that's typically the case. And so a lot of times men want to be, they feel like this lone ranger mentality, like, I'm going to manage my emotions by myself, I'll make my own decisions, I don't need help, you've heard me say that, I hate being needy, right? It's kind of like one of my issues. And so men tend to be, this tends to be one that we own, okay? And so was Jesus a lone ranger? Jesus, Son of God, fully man, fully God, was he a lone ranger? So I was reading through this, and in John 8, it says this, Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. So what Jesus is telling the guys is this, I'm not here on my own accord, my father sent me. Don't you see that? Jesus is accepting influence from the father. So Jesus is fully God. He's Lord, but he accepted influence from the Father. John 10:29 says this, my Father who has given them to me is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one. So here he's recognizing that God gave these people to him. This wasn't all on his own, okay? That God had this role in this. And so Jesus, once again, is acknowledging that he's unified. He's not a solo act. He's unified with the Father. He's not on his own mission. He's on their mission. Verse 37 says, I'm not doing the works of my Father. Wait, if I'm not doing the works of my Father, then do not believe me. But if I do them, even though you do not believe me, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father. What he's saying here is this, that the works and the miracles that I'm doing here, I'm doing this through the Father, and that he was acting in harmony and obedience with the Father. So Jesus is not this lone ranger. So the disciples see this all-powerful guy who can control the wind and the weather and cast out demons and cure disease and illness, raise people from the dead. And I mean, if anybody would seem like they would be a capable lone ranger, it would be Jesus, right? But Jesus keeps telling them, this is God working through me, okay? And then this morning, actually, I was just kind of having some time alone this morning, me, Sudoku, and God, and do you remember this story? This is not in the notes, Pat. Do you remember this story where there's a Samaritan woman wants something from Jesus? And he tells her, you know, I'm kind of here for the Jewish people at this time. Do you remember the story? And Jesus, and she replies back and she's like, but don't like the dogs get the scraps from the table? I'm paraphrasing the story. And he hears it and he responds. Okay, so this was not his plan, but he accepts some influence from somebody else. Let's see here. John 14:30 says this, I will no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming. He has no claim on me, but I do as the Father commanded me, so that the world may know that I love the Father. He says, rise, let us go from here. So he's once again, he's like, I am doing what God commands me to do. John 15 says this, verse 14, you are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I've heard from my Father, I've made known to you. So once again, what Jesus is teaching was influenced by the Father. And then he's also telling the guys, if you want to be my friend, you're going to obey what I teach. Which is, if you want to be my friend, you're going to let me influence you. So this is the example. We have the Son of God, who we've worshiped and called Lord, accepts influence. So we are going to follow that example. We're going to let your partner influence you by taking into consideration his or her thoughts and feelings. There's a quote from this book. It says this. When a man is not willing to share power with his partner, but when a man is not willing to share power with his partner, there is an 81% chance that his marriage will self-destruct. Isn't that interesting? I'm not saying that there's not some leadership roles in there, but sharing power is a spectrum, okay? Right? There's like 50-50, 60-40, 70-30, who knows? she decides this, he decides this. You work that out. But the studies show that if he's not willing to share power, there's an 81% chance that his marriage will self-destruct. That's kind of important to know, isn't it? Isn't that something to think about, right? If you want your marriage to last, that means you probably can't be a lone ranger. Okay, so what does it mean to let my partner influence me? What does that mean? Does that mean that every time he says do this, I do this? Every time she says do this, I do that? No, not necessarily. Does that mean that you give up all your personal power and you lose some of your identity? Not necessarily. It means that they do not resist sharing power and decision-making with their spouse. So I'm going to pick on Pat and Michelle for a second, okay? And I know them. I don't think this will ever happen, okay? But let's say they're having breakfast on a Saturday morning before Pat goes to Cars and Coffee, and Pat goes there almost every week with Danny, okay? And he announces to Michelle, there is this new Porsche there that I'm going to buy. It's only going to cost, I have no idea, Pat, let's make a number, 180 grand. Okay? And we're dream world, right, Pat? We're dreaming here. And let's say he goes, I'm going to buy this car. And Michelle goes, you know, I'm not sure that's a good idea.
That's not
what I know. I'm giving you the PG version. Okay, and then Pat goes, you know, I really wasn't asking for permission. I'm going to buy this car. What are the odds that Pat is sleeping in that car that night, right? So if Pat is not willing to accept some influence, there is going to be some problems. That the 81% we're climbing, right? Okay. So Michelle goes, I don't think that may be a good idea. She's very soft, tone it down, no harsh startup, you know what I mean? And then Pat's like, what are you talking about? And then Michelle might have been, she's like, I've been listening to Just Messages, so I'm going to do the nice complaint. And she might say, I'm feeling disrespected by your desire to spend nearly $250,000 without my approval. Complaint with some energy, right? And Pat might have a brighter moment and go, you know, I really don't want to disrespect my wife who I love. Maybe we should talk this out, right? Share some power. So, but the idea here is that we're both involved in the decision-making process. Now, that sounds obvious, but I have known people to go out and buy, like, expensive cars, maybe not like that expensive, without telling their spouse. Like, that's going to go really well, okay? So, it does mean that you, we want to let our partner influence you. So it means that you do not resist sharing. So Pat might have felt like this tension, like, I don't feel like I should have to ask. I have a good paying job, and I'm a man, and I don't need to ask for this, right? Do you understand how that could come across? But that's not going to necessarily work well with his spouse. It means searching for common ground rather than insisting on getting their own way. Searching for common ground, like, what can we do together, right? So it's possible. Michelle goes, honey buns, I don't think that we should spend $180,000 this year on the car, okay? And Pat's like, why not? And she's like, well, it's a chunk of money, and we might have kids going to college someday. Oh, yeah. Pat's like, I do want the kids to go to college someday. And she's like, yes, we both share this. And Pat's like, but I really like the Porsche. And she's like, I do too. We'll get you a Hot Wheel, right? So, but it could be that they have common ground on the college education. Like, they decide priority-wise, and Pat's like, you know what? Thank you for talking me off the ledge. I kind of forgot about college education. You know, Danny is graduating this year, right? And so they might reach some common ground. And Michelle might say, hey, but if you want, after you get the college education paid, you work one extra year in your retirement before you retire, and maybe we'll get a car. Who knows, right? But the idea here is this, is that you don't resist sharing power. You don't demand to be in charge of yourself, and you're seeking for common ground. What can we agree on? Okay, instead of insisting to get in your own way. A lot of times we get in an argument and we're like, I want it my way, and we insist on it, and we shut the other spouse out. It means accepting influence from your spouse. Accepting influence from your spouse is consistent with loving, respecting, and honoring your spouse. Do you understand? Accepting influence, sharing some power is consistent with loving, respecting, and honoring your spouse. Okay, so if you're an emotionally intelligent spouse, emotionally intelligent, and we can all aspire or can grow toward that, right? Being emotionally intelligent strengthens your friendship with your partner. I mean, ultimately, I'm going to assume that what you want in your marriage is to have a great friendship with a partner you respect and trust and you can make decisions with. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to be emotionally intelligent. You're going to have to share, okay? So this strengthens your friendship with your partner. Emotionally intelligent spouses, they're open to learning more about their emotions from their spouse, okay? And for men, it's open to learning more about emotions from her because he honors and respects her, okay? So in case you haven't figured this out, men and women are generally different. We got some differences, right? And these are generalities, but typically, women have like a broader range of emotions, okay? Typically, not always, okay? I've been called the woman in the relationship before, okay? So I'm a pretty emotional person, right? And whatever, I am. I'll own it. And so, but a lot of times what happens is she has to kind of teach him emotions, right? We're like, you know, because a lot of times, a lot of men show up in the relationship with like two, maybe three. Like, there's happy, you know, I got a raise or I got a car, happy. And then there might be sad if I wreck my car or my dog dies. And then anger. There's like, we have a limited set of emotions sometimes, right? And so we have to learn. Actually, we have them. We don't have labels on them. We don't understand them, right? And so, but so sometimes what happens is we have to learn this emotional world, okay? But it doesn't mean we have to act the same way. This is so important, okay? So just because you understand the emotions from your spouse doesn't mean that she's going to hand you a woman card and you're going to be emotional with her, okay? It doesn't mean that you're going to become less manly. It just means you become emotionally intelligent, okay? So learning emotions from your spouse doesn't mean you're going to express them like her or him. You're going to express them like you, okay? And then a part of this, being emotionally intelligent, is to choose we over me. Choosing we over me. So we're going to go back to Pat and Michelle's example with the car. Pat has this desire to buy this Porsche, and hey, I get it, right? Who wouldn't want one? But at some point in time, because Pat's intelligent, I trust him, he's going to choose the we over the me, right? And then in the conversation with Andrew and Amber over the toilet seat, and you know, and it's funny, you guys, most of our marital fights aren't over the big issues, right? They're over the toilet seat, they're over who drank the last of the milk, who didn't empty the trash, who didn't wash the dog, you know, who left the underwear on the floor, I mean, who, you know what I mean, who moved my shaving kit? Is like, those are the earth-shattering arguments, right? And so sometimes we choose, like in this dog, the toilet seat, choosing we over me, right? What's best for us? So how can we learn to yield? Isn't it hard to yield sometimes? You know, especially if you feel attacked. I know, like, sometimes as a pastor, so I'm not married to you, but we kind of have a unique relationship, right? And sometimes I'll hear something, and it's not meant as an attack, but I get defensive about it, right? I hear it, and it hurts. And I go home and have a pity party, you know, and I'm like, I'm thinking about just kicking John Van Gerpen out of the church because he hurts my feelings, and I'm done with him. But then I have to go, okay, maybe I need to yield, right? Maybe I need to yield in the situation. So here's the thing. So how can we learn to yield? Often, okay, we need to discover that we often need to yield in order to win. We have to yield in order to win. If you win every argument with your spouse, you're going to lose in your marriage. Could you say that? If you win every argument, you're going to lose in your marriage. So we need to discover that often we need to yield in order to win. Does that sound familiar at all? Because you see, you might have heard this in the Bible. Jesus said this, "For whoever would save his life, win, will lose it. But whoever loses his life, for my sake, will find it." Whoever yields their life for Jesus' sake finds it. We see this principle in Scripture all the time. Philippians 2, we looked at this verse last week, says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit." That would be winning, right? "But in humility, count others more significant than yourselves." That would be yielding. Let each of you look not only to his own interest, winning, but to the interest of others, yielding, right? So winning an argument doesn't necessarily help you win in your marriage. And if you come from a competitive environment, that sounds foreign, okay? If you are really defensive, that means you have to be willing to lose. And it's hard on the inside to just absorb those like verbal blows, but you're doing it for the sake of your marriage because you want to win in the marriage. So we discover that we often need to yield in order to win. And then we work on the previous skills. Those previous skills the last couple weeks, those aren't there by accident, okay? It's much easier to yield to somebody who you know their world, okay? So with Pat and Michelle's little situation there with the car, maybe Michelle knows that all of Pat's coworkers are in like the expensive Porsche club at work. I don't know if they have one, okay, but like, you know, so like maybe like they're in like the 2,000 year above Porsche club at work, okay, and Pat's got like a best friend in the club, but Pat can't get in that club because his car is too old, right? And so Michelle knows this because she knows his world. Do you see that? Okay, and Michelle knows his strengths because he's been working on affirmation, and Pat's been working on affirmation, and he knows Michelle's strengths, so they know each other's world, they have affirmation, and so they're building, they have like these skills in place, and so when Pat announces he's going to go out and buy an expensive Porsche, Michelle knows his world, right? Now, chances are Pat's not going to go, I want to buy this Porsche because I feel less than the other guys at work because they have faster cars than me, and I'm feeling less manly, and I feel left out. That's probably not coming out of Pat's mouth, right? Okay, because Pat's man. He's a 6'3" dude, right? But, well, he knows it or not, it's in there, okay? But Michelle, his emotionally intelligent spouse, knows this. And she knows that Pat is feeling a little vulnerable at work. He's feeling a little less manly. You know, the pastor just got a cool red car. And so she doesn't have the harsh startup. Do you see how this all works together? She doesn't have the harsh startup because she knows Pat's world. Please nod with me if you understand this a little bit. Do you see how this all works together? So if we know each other's world, we have admiration. Pat, Michelle adores Pat. Pat's got all these great qualities. He's just a little out there today. You know what I mean? And so he knows these qualities. And I'm drawing the blank on, what was last week's win? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. And Pat responds to a lot of her bids, right? So she's not mad at him because he's ignoring her, right? So we build like this good foundation. So it makes it easier to yield. So, and Pat's like, I really want the Porsche, but Michelle really cares about me. And Michelle admires me. She thinks I'm a good husband. And this probably doesn't totally match up with good husband right now, right? It's like slightly selfish. It's a good car, so, you know, but it's slightly, maybe a little selfish, right? And so as he looks across the table, Michelle's smiling face, honey's like, you know what? I'm choosing we. It's so much easier to choose we if we like her or if we like him. Do you understand how that works? It's hard to choose we if you don't like him. So we do these other steps so it's easier for us to yield. It's easier for us to choose the we. And then we search through your partner's request for something you can agree to. Okay, so when you hear like this thing and you're like, this is a, you're like, oh, you're getting defensive. You're like, how could you consider doing that? So you're searching for something, right? So maybe Michelle goes, Pat, I know you love that Porsche, okay? And it's just not in our ballpark right now. But how about every raise we get for the next couple of years on our salary, we just set aside for a Porsche fund. I know it's important to you, and I love you, and we do like doing our little Napa Valley drives or whatever you guys do. I follow you on Facebook. And right? And so she's not agreeing to the huge expense of the Porsche right now, right? But she's finding something that she can agree to. So in a smaller situation, okay, pick a smaller deal, like the whole bathrooms incident. Andrew's feeling defensive, right? But he could, instead of like, and he could like step back just a second and say, okay, I'm going to lower my defenses. I'm not going to attack my spouse because I do like her. I want to choose we. Is there something I can agree to in this situation? Is there something I can give her? Now, he could promise never to leave the toilet seat up again, but that'd be bold. A never is a big one, right? It could be, I can give her an apology, right? I will apologize. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I was half asleep last night. I was in the bathroom, whatever. And so you could apologize. But the idea is this, when you're having an argument or you're having a disagreement, you're looking for something. What can I agree to in this? So it's not quite a win or lose situation. Do you follow that? What can I agree to? So you're looking, you're searching through your partner's request for something you can agree to. So it's like if there's a complaint or criticism, it might even be hurtful, but is there something in the complaint that you can agree to? Okay, so let's say John has never done this, okay? But let's say John has put in the people card. Our pastor is completely unorganized. Now, I could get defensive on that, right? I'm like, oh, that hurts. He has no idea what I'm going through. He doesn't know all the people I talked to. He doesn't know about the emails. And I can just like, and then I can go, yeah, and look what you do. You remember that time? And I could attack back, right? Nice to email. Well, thank you for your encouraging comment, John Van Gerpen. And your tires got slashed, I'm sure you didn't deserve that tire slash 2 weeks ago, And I could fire back an attack, right? Or I could go, this hurts. But is there any truth to this? Is there anything I can agree to in this? And I might email back, hey, John, you know what? Your pastor is a little unorganized. I'm working on it. Give me grace. Admit, I struggle with this, right? Is there anything I can agree to? So you're looking for, is there anything you can give into your spouse on this situation? Okay? It doesn't mean that you can do everything they ask, but you're just looking for something that you can agree to. Then, if you're having difficulty accepting influence, acknowledge this tendency and talk it over with your spouse. Just go, hey, I've noticed I really have a hard time accepting influence from you. Okay? And so you talk about it. Now, I want to warn you here. Admitting a flaw, a weakness, is a huge step of vulnerability, especially for somebody who's defensive. Right? It's a huge step. So, if you happen to be married to somebody who's defensive, and they come to you and they acknowledge this is something they struggle with, this is not the time to jump on board and totally agree with them on this. Okay, so let's say Andrew's like, Amber, I just want you to know that I was listening to Jeff's messages this weekend. I think I struggle with being defensive. This is not the time for Amber to go, you know what? You're totally right. You stink at that, right? We do not jump on board on this one, okay? Because they're trying to overcome this defensiveness, right? And so the goal here is understanding and closeness, right? So this is an opportunity. If somebody comes and says, hey, I'm struggling with this, this is an opportunity for growth, for closeness, right, for understanding. And so here are some possible responses to this. You may want to write these down. I've noticed that too sometimes. That's so much better than you're that way all the time, right? I've noticed that too sometimes. Why do you think that is? See how softer that would be? Okay. By the way, these are so much easier to write from a laptop in a non-conflict zone. Okay. Or it could say, somebody goes, hey, I notice I'm having a hard time accepting influence from you. And you could respond by saying, I see that occasionally. Why is it hard for you to ask me for advice? Now that one's even trickier, isn't it? Because now you're opening the door for him to say, well, I have a hard time asking you for advice because you give it all the time. Or because your advice seems biased or whatever, right? And so, but if the goal is understanding and closeness, we go there, right? Unless you're defensive also, right? So, but to work past this defensive thing, we have to talk it out. And so if your spouse is going to come to you and they're brave enough to acknowledge they struggle with this, that's like a golden nugget, okay? You treasure that, you embrace that, and this is not the time to get all judgmental on them, okay? Let them work this out. So just them sharing it with you and you hearing it and not jumping on board and attacking them will actually help them become less defensive because they've shown a vulnerability with you and you haven't used it. Do you follow? Okay. So let's remember the goal of marriage is to become one, to be fully known and fully loved. Isn't that what you really want? To be fully known and fully loved. And criticism and defensiveness prevent this. And letting your spouse influence you allows this. Your spouse cannot become one with you or be fully known and loved by you if you don't let them influence you.